Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
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 Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Diana. I assume this is Diana.
Yes, is that Steve?
Yes. This is Steve.
Hey. Okay, hey. I was expecting something to introduce us, but...
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
We're not on, are we?
I don't know if we are or not, but let's assume that we are. I think we are because it's 1 o'clock, so let me just say welcome.
Welcome to
Blog Talk Radio. And this is Diana Gould, and I'm speaking to Stephen J. Schwartz. So, hello, how are you?
Good. Thank you for putting this together. I'm honored to be asked to participate in this call.
Well, thank you. Me too. I think I'm talking to the only writer writing darker thrillers than me.
Sounds like it. I mean, it sounds like we're pretty darn. You're a close second if you're dark, because I've read some blurbs about your book that have really surprised me, and I'm dying to read Cold Water now.
Well, thank you very much, and I look forward to reading your books. We are meeting here in Cyber Talk Radio rather than having read our books. But I wanted to ask you, because I've been reading about you, and I wanted to ask you, how do you research a book about sex addiction? Sounds like fun.
Yeah, you have to depend on your own personal nemesis, I guess, to go that deep. I did a lot of research. I mean, for one, this is a subject matter that's pretty personal to me, because I have suffered from sex addiction myself. You know, I dealt with this for many years, and for 15 years I was kind of cruising streets and going to strip clubs and massage parlors, and I had lived a double life. So it was a very difficult thing for me to go through, and that was over 10 years ago now. My wife and I, worked through this together. We went to couples counseling and to 12-step meetings, and I basically used this novel as my catharsis to get through that whole period of my life. And I'm very fortunate that my wife wanted to take this journey with me, and I discovered this person and all sides of this person that she thought she knew for a number of years. And she became my editor on my books, actually, on Boulevard and Beach. She kind of encouraged me to go deeper and deeper into my personal feelings and experiences with the subject matter. And oftentimes she would surprise me by where she wanted me to go. It was kind of a cool journey for both of us, and it's brought us a lot closer through the process.
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess when I wanted to write a novel about a detective with some type of problem. We've seen detectives with alcohol problems and drug problems many times over. So I felt this would be a good topic, a good subject matter that people don't really know that much about, but we hear about it in the media. And I wanted to take a serious look at it tell a story about a homicide detective that used to work Vice, that crossed the line when he worked in Vice and fell into an addictive compulsion, and it destroyed his marriage, and it's something that he hides from his captain, and the only people he talks to about it are the people in his 12-step meetings. So that's where it came from.
And when you wrote
you asked a tough question right off the bat.
When you wrote the first book, did you have in mind that it was going to be a series, or did you just think about telling that story, that first story?
I really just wanted to tell a story, and I didn't even know I was writing a crime thriller. I was just writing a story about a guy in an impossible situation, and it felt like it could have been fiction as opposed to a mystery. But I spent many years in the world of film development. I was a director of development for Wolfgang Peterson for about 5 years. So I read thousands of thriller screenplays. So I just kind of, being in that world, that's where I wanted to take this story. And it was just a standalone. until the book sold, and then my agent called me up and said, congratulations, you've got a 2-book deal. And I said, but I only wrote one book. Yeah, uh-huh. Let's write another one, stupid. So, so then I wrote the sequel to that.
Yeah. And I know I've read that you see it as three-act structure. You have another one coming? Are you working on another one?
I'm working on the third Hayden Glass book right now. So it feels to me that it needs to be a trilogy, that his story is incomplete by the end of book two. And I mean, I can continue writing many of the Hayden Glass books, but it definitely needs a third, and then I can probably put it away for a while after I do the third. Just mm-hmm. he needs to have a little bit of resolution
mm-hmm.
and journey. I would like to, if you don't mind, I'd like to read a little something, because we're not here just to talk about Stephen J. Schwartz. We're here to talk about Diana Gould and your novel as well. And I wanted to read a blurb that I read by Jerry Stahl, who is a mm-hmm. phenomenal author. He wrote Permanent Midnight and many other novels that I love. And I read this, and this is why I want to read your book. This is what Jerry Stahl says. With Coldwater, mm-hmm. Diana Gould has staked her claim as a writer on par with the L.A. greats, Pink Chandler, MacDonald, and Elroy. A classic Tinseland tour from glitz to gutter, narrated by a woman on her own trip to narcotic hell, in a voice you'd follow anywhere. For fans of noir, fans of fearless, unflinching fiction, and fans of literature, this is the kind of book you'll read till your eyes bleed, then stagger into daylight in sheer brain-fucking wonder.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Diana, I want a blurb like that from Jerry Stahl.
Well, I burst into tears when I read it. I opened my email and I saw that it was about midnight. I was coming home from somewhere and it had been sent to me, and I really did burst into tears, because I wouldn't have written that for myself, but I don't even know him.
Yeah.
You know, I had gotten blurbs from friends of mine, but we had a friend in common, Cubby Selby, who I know was a mentor to him and was also a mentor to me. And in fact, Cubby Selby is the first person mentioned in the acknowledgments, because I was talking to Cubby, this was years ago, because he died several years ago. But you know, I had been a screenwriter, and it was clear to me that that part of my life was over. I had a very long and somewhat successful career, and mostly in television, although I started out wanting to write movies. And, you know, careers have arcs, and the arc had reached a point where I just knew this isn't going to work for me anymore. And so I was talking to Cubby, and I said, well, you know, I want to write, and I've been so scared of writing, and I'm not happy unless I am writing, but I don't want to write, and I don't know how to write, and I don't think I'm good enough, and, you know. And Cubby said, Diana, did it ever occur to you to just sit down and write? And I thought, oh. So I hung up, and I started this book. And, you know, started making notes for this book. And like you, I didn't have in mind that it was going to be a thriller or a mystery. I had a character. You know, because you and I both come from the world of movies and television, so we know how to give characters what they call a strong want. Mm-hmm. So I gave my character a very strong want and something that she just had to do. And I put her in an impossible situation. And I think you and I, because we do have this background in you know, entertainment that has to be has to be good for an audience, which I have to say I'm very grateful for, because what I did while I was writing this book is I went back to school. I got an MFA in fiction, and I was really surprised at how little my fellow students knew about story and story structure. I mean, they could spin out words and write descriptions and describe the room and the gloves and the clothes, but they didn't know the first thing about a story, and we have that. It's almost innate in us from all these years of telling stories. So,
I was just going to say,
the other thing that I never realized was going to serve me so well, because a lot of my experience in television was writing nighttime soaps. I wrote for Knott's Landing, I wrote for Dynasty, and several others that weren't as famous as those. And so we always structured for bringing the audience back after the commercial, and, you know, over the next week, you have to end with a hook strong enough that people would want to come back and see what happened. And I think the thing that I hear most often about my book is that it's a page turner, and that people say once they start reading it, they can't stop until they get to the end. And I hate to say it, but that came from Dynasty.
Yeah, it's funny. Our experiences are very similar that way. While I didn't write television, you know, I have written numerous screenplays and worked in that world in development, and I am so thankful for that. Because it really did serve me well. I didn't have to think about story or character development or three-act structure. It was kind of, by the time I spent 5 years with Wolfgang and read the thousands of screenplays, that was embedded in my psyche. So so therefore, you know, the first novel I wrote sold immediately, and it has a commercial nature to it, and it has been described as a page-turner as well. But that comes after, you know, 10 or 12 feature screenplays that I wouldn't want to show anybody, you know. So
right.
It's not like everyone has to go through that process of discovering themselves and learning how to tell a story.
Right.
And I think both of us are lucky that our books
Do you feel that writing books, I don't know how to put this, Well, you said that, you know, this is based on your own experience and your own experience with sex addiction, but how, let me put it this way, it seems to me, as someone who's been in the entertainment industry all these years, that the big plus of writing books is that you can write what you want, which you can write what you want in television and movies, but nobody's going to make it.
Right.
And by the time you do make it, a lot of other people have had a lot to say about what's in it.
Yeah.
So do you feel that you're writing commercially or personally or some blend of the two? Or how much are you writing your books with the intention of selling them?
The writing the novel is, for me, it was the way to protect myself, and I'm not talking about the novel Boulevard. I'm talking about writing the novel, as opposed to writing the screenplay or the teleplay or whatever. To be able to write prose, to me, is protecting myself, because as a screenwriter, you're only really writing an outline for a director's vision, at least for film.
Right.
You're lucky to get it into someone's hands, a good director. You'd be very lucky if that director actually wants to work with you and help develop it with your voice still intact. If you're so fortunate as to actually see your film up on the screen, you'd be lucky to recognize anything in it as your own. But as a novel, you know, you can sit down and write really whatever you want. And that has been an absolute joy for me to do what I want, to not have to answer to, you know, a group of development executives or producers who second guess everything.
Right.
And I really had kind of lost the ability to tell a story for a while before I started. I had to take, about a couple years or so just to get away from the film business for a while and to start kind of writing short stories and play around before I even decided to write a novel, just to kind of heal myself from the process that is Hollywood. And then I was lucky that the book that I wrote wasn't something like a Philip Roth novel, which could have gone that direction, you know. Instead, it did have some, you know, commercial qualities to it. And I realized I can be very happy writing commercial literature, you know, commercial pieces that have something to say. But if I were to just write, you know, a very commercial story that works on all the commercial levels but doesn't have something unique to say about the world, I wouldn't be happy.
Right. Right. So your experience in the entertainment business was valuable but also painful, would you say?
Yeah, love-hate relationship. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The most fun you could ever have is to be involved in the entertainment industry, but it's pure chaos. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And it contributed to the kind of personality I had that could actually have an addiction. I mean, it really was a contributor, as it was to Jerry too with his work, and so many artists who turn to drugs or alcohol or whatever type of addiction that they turn to, because you don't really get seen. I mean, that was, I think, something that I realized in many years in film, is that my voice wasn't heard. You know, I represented a particular storyteller that was Wolfgang Peterson. He was the storyteller of our community. So, you know, his was the voice that is heard. But I was basically just, you know, a gatekeeper to him as a development. Writing the novels gives me the opportunity to be the storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't many storytellers in the business. There are writers, directors, some very good producers, and some very involved actors. And then for the most part, there's a whole bunch of other people that kind of are, you know, they're just business type of people or people that are looking to gain some kind of fame, you know.
Yeah. And some of the best writers, some of the screenwriters of my favorite movies, if they weren't the director, which they weren't, they don't have a body of work, because it doesn't count if you've written a wonderful movie. You know, I'm thinking of Bob Getchell and Alice Didn't Live Here Anymore. I love that movie, but who knows anything about Bob Getchell? It's a Martin Scorsese movie, even though it has nothing to do with Martin Scorsese's other work.
The director's films, a film by a particular director, and we look at the director, and we see his body of work, as you said, and we don't really consider that there's writers involved.
I know.
I remember the gaffe that was made at the Academy Awards when what was that film? American Beauty, yes. When Kevin Spacey thanked the director for his great words, but Alan Ball was the guy who wrote the screenplay, not Sam Raimi, who directed the film. So
right.
it's just so common to think of that it can slip out that easily. You know,
Right. I'm surprised that even as a development executive you would have that feeling. I understand as a writer to feel unheard.
Well, it's funny because I was among a handful of people, and we were kind of in the inner circle there. I mean, Wolfgang, the major, you know, A-list director. So the people that I would deal with on the phone, tracking projects and other development executives, you know, I was talking to all the, you know, top 30 or so of them in the industry, and only two or three of us We're ourselves writers. Development is a track to go towards being a producer. So a lot of people really had no sense of story, and they were in a position to be, you know, to be judging story and to be talking to great screenwriters about their work and giving advice based on just kind of their personal feelings. And the few of us that were writers, it was very painful for us to go through this process, to have to let go of writers. You know, you buy a project and you work with a writer, and then you want to give the writer a second or a third pass on the script, and your producers are saying, you know, no, I want a list of other writers. We need to replace this writer right away, and you end up replacing writers 2, 3, 4, 5 times on a project. And that was hard for me and for the other guys who were writers, and they didn't last long. After a while, I lasted. That was 5 years is a long time. You know, most of them lasted 2 or 3 years before they left to write.
Mm-hmm.
Try it on their own.
Yeah, it's very, very painful. It's very painful. And but you didn't write about the industry. I did. I worked out all these resentments in the course of the Cold War. I mean, I'm because I'm writing the second book now, and it doesn't really have an entertainment business background the way the first one did. And, you know, it was really fun writing those scenes because I did, you know, and the book has a very sardonic, wry humor just because, you know, it was, and in fact, I was talking to somebody the other day who's reading the book now, who's not in the business, and she said, "Oh, I love the satire." I said, "The satire? I didn't think I was writing satire. I was just writing with what it is."
Yeah, it's so funny that you should mention that, because when I watched The Player, remember the first time I saw The Player, and I realized that it isn't a satire; it's a documentary.
Right.
That's the business. That's what it's like. It is that crazy and that ruthless. And I love that. I love that perspective on the business, and that's one of the reasons why I really am eager to read your book, because I love that point of that perspective on the industry. You know, the darkness. Like What Makes Sammy Run was like the earliest version of that same story.
Right.
You know, but Schulpert's classic, and I, you know, as you read that now, and it could be happening now. Crazy.
Right.
It was written like the 30s or so, 40s. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the main thing is, I mean, the egos haven't changed and the greed hasn't changed, but the corporate nature certainly has. I mean, it's so corporate. And and the other thing I was thinking when you were talking earlier, I mean, we're lucky that we have this experience with the three-act structure in our books. You know, we know how to structure a story. And yet, so often when I'm going to a movie, it is that three-act structure that bothers me. It's just, you know, it's like everybody involved in the film took Robert McKee's story class, you know, they're just hitting those beats. You know, on page 30 there's this twist, and on page 60 this happens, on page 90 that happens. And these, pardon me, but these development executives who, I mean, that's the other thing. You know, who are these people? You know, the same story of Fred Zinnemann taking a meeting with some network executive who began, you know, some young kid begins the meeting by saying, "Well, what have you done?" And Fred Zinnemann said, "You first."
That's good. I like that. Yeah, I'm going to remember that. Yeah. Well, and I remember even in Dawn Steele's book that she wrote, I remember Dawn Steele, she's the president of first female president of a studio in Columbia. And she had a relationship with Martin Scorsese, and when they met, Marty said, "Oh, you're one of them. And they're us, storytellers, and then there's them." And there was a you know, who presumed to know what's going on. And that has gotten worse over the years as the industry has become more corporate, at least in film. Television has had a wonderful renaissance, and there's some outstanding work being done in television, and the writers who are producers actually have the kind of freedom that that the authors have in novels.
Yes. Those few, you know, David Chase or what's his name? Blanking at the moment, the Mad Men guy. You know, it's a wonderful form, that the miniseries. You know, on cable they have enough time and they can write the whole season before they start shooting. Anyway, I wanted to ask you what I always, you know, what writers always want to ask each other is how you know, what's your schedule like, and when do you write, and how do you write, and when do you start, and how how do you know when to quit for the day?
My process is just pure chaos, actually. There's no sense, no rhyme and reason. I'm the kind of guy who needs to write and throw everything aside and just write in a huge kind of tumultuous hurricane of, you know, 10, 12-hour shifts. That's what I've always written all my life. It's just, you know, take 3 or 4 weeks and write, you know, 10 to 15 hours a day and not stop. But as I grew older and had to get jobs and, you know, get married and have kids, you know, that I can't keep that up. So I've had to just kind of fit it in where I can. And it's usually, you know, every, you know, if I have a day job, then in the evenings I'm writing, and in the weekends I'm writing. When I wrote Boulevard, it took 3.5 years. And I wrote every evening, you know, all weekends, you know, 10 to 12 hours a day on Saturday and Sunday, all my vacation time, all my sick days, to do that. And then when I wrote Beat, I, you know, I was on contract, and I had 1 year to write that, and I still had the day job, and just it, you know, it killed me to do that. And I've slowed down a little bit since I've written Beat. And I'm also very aware of the time that was taken away from my kids and my wife when I'm on that schedule. I write in cafes and to not be present. So I spent a lot of time slowing down the process, spending a lot of time with my family, you know, kind of realizing that you know, that's really the most important thing. And my family, they join me wherever, whenever I do book events. We were at the Festival of Books at USC a couple weekends ago, and everyone there knows me and my family, and the kids are 12 and 14 now, and they come and they watch all the panels, and they take photographs, and they go to the green room, and they meet authors, and, you know, they get to meet Buzz Aldrin in the green room and things like this, and that's how it's growing up. So it's a pretty fun experience to do that.
Do either of them want to write?
I think that my father was a doctor, and I didn't want to become a doctor after seeing that. And I think neither of them want to be writers. However, they are really interested in video games, and they both want to design video games. So that's, you know, that's probably their version of being an author, is to be a video game designer. And they know story. You know, we're sitting at home talking about the hero's journey, you know, or you know, the protagonist does this or that, and that's just the nomenclature that they're used to, and they grew up in that. So that's a neat, kind of like that.
Oh, God forbid they may become development executives.
I'll never let that happen. And so what is your process like? How do you write?
Well, I am fortunate enough to not need a job in addition, so I can write full time. But I actually do a lot of other things. I teach as well, and when I was on a series, I used to write like that, you know, and I've never been able to write at night, but certainly all weekends. But for me, I really need to start early in the morning and get it over with, and I kind of work on it. I'm the opposite of you. I like to work on the schedule. Start at the same time every day, end at the same time every day, and just follow that schedule regardless of what happens while I'm writing, because a lot of the writing time is spent staring out the window and staring into space and not knowing what happens next, and that has to be okay. And if I'm not on a schedule, that might propel me away from the desk and the computer, so I just stay there. And I also this book took me a lot of time to write too, and I'm in the same situation where the publisher wants the second book right away, and I can't even imagine how I'm gonna do it.
What does right away mean? Does it mean you have 9 months to do it, or
Yeah, I said, well, I can't write a book a year. And he said, well, maybe 18 months.
Yeah, that would be nice, 18 months. I would have liked that.
Yeah, I can do that. But you know, I have to do a lot of rewriting because I can't outline. I did in television, but I can't. I just don't know until I've written it. You know, I'm kind of creating as I write and then go back and outline. So it's tough, but what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Anyway, it looks like our time is up.
All right.
This has been absolutely wonderful talking to you, Steve. I'm very happy to meet you.
Very good.
By phone.
Yeah.
And I look forward to you reading my book, and I look forward to reading your books.
I'm getting it right away. I'm going to jump right into it because I need something good to read, and this one sounds like it will fit the bill. And after we read each other's books, let's actually meet in person. Let's go to a cafe and get a cup of coffee.
Yeah. So you like? I read that you like to write in cafes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's such a lonely process that you want to do it amongst. You want to be able to have people around. I write in cafes where other people write, other writers go, and so everyone's kind of working towards the same creative goal. And when I get tired, I look up and someone else has gotten tired, and he looks up and we can stand up and chat for 15 minutes about whatever we want, and then we fill the guilty pool and go back to our desks and continue writing.
And is there, because I've been looking for a cafe that doesn't have music playing, but usually they have music playing just if it bothers me.
Yeah. You're not going to find that.
Yeah.
I managed to kind of push everything out of my head. I don't even hear the music or the conversation around me. It all just becomes a buzz. But there is some place in the West Side, I think, where you can go and have an office and other writers work in this kind of cafe environment without music. But it's
I was reading about that. I Googled, because I'm in a temporary apartment at the moment while some work is being done on the house, and I was looking for a place to write, and I Googled good places to write in Venice or Santa Monica, and that came up, the Writer's Junction.
Yeah.
But it's expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive. I know a woman, an author, who writes there. She loves it. But for me, I if I'm going that far up north, I'm out far in the South Bay, but if I go up to Santa Monica, I'll write at the place called 212 Pier Street, which probably came up on your Google search. The old novel cafe. There's a few novel cafes now, but that's the original, and I've been writing there for 25 years. Written most of both books there.
Okay, that's good to know that. That's right near where I am. Well, maybe after we read each other books, we'll meet for coffee.
Yeah, we'll do it. There.
Great. Okay, Steve. That's cool. Well, it's been great talking to you, and I look forward to continuing the conversation one way or another.
Sounds good, Dana. Take care.
Okay. Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.